Because part of the problem, the illness that we're all in, is consumerism. We built this capitalist society that, you know, has its beautiful parts too, but the idea of turning everyone to consumerism, that equals depression, right? The human spirit needs to create. It's the opposite of consumerism. And so it doesn't matter if you're creating a poem, you're creating a piece of art, you're creating a song, you're singing. You have to create to be alive.
Okay, today's guest on the Gravity Podcast is Chris Pan. This is a super exciting one for me. As many of you know, Chris will be joining us here this coming weekend as the commencement speaker at Ohio State University, of which I have a graduate. So it was really a great opportunity for me to spend some time with Chris on the podcast. Hopefully you will get a sense as to who he is, what he's going to be speaking about if you are going to be attending or graduating from Ohio State. This is a really, really wonderful human being who is going to give you tremendous insight and who I just loved to get to know and to have this conversation with. Chris is awesome. He is the grandson of refugees. He's the son of immigrants who came to America with $2,000 and a dream. He's an immigrant himself. He learned to speak English on the flight over and eventually ended up at Harvard. And I went to business school there, wanted to become a motivational speaker, graduated undergrad from Ohio State University. So we'll make sure we give credit to Ohio State too. But after college, became one of the youngest directors at Pepsi, worked for McKinsey, went on to become an early employee at Facebook, helped that company go from 50 million to a half a billion users, and taught Mark Zuckerberg to learn Mandarin. But more importantly, what Chris is really focused on today is what I'm super excited about. He's spent the last decade helping millions of people live with intention at myintent.org project and spiritual fitness. He's dedicated his life to emotional wellness, to spirituality, and has launched now Vomo.me in 2021 to make singing fun and accessible for emotional wellness. And he's currently launching a new platform to help people save and invest for financial freedom, which we talk a little bit about that. There is massive disruption there. It's a wonderful conversation that goes from Chris's past, his childhood, the importance of things like church and leadership and Hoffman Institute, psychedelics. We kind of cover a wide, wide variety of subjects, but he's a really wonderful person, and I'm excited to have him here in Columbus and for you to hear him on this podcast. Welcome, Chris. It's awesome to have you. And I was starting to say before we got going here, I actually think we've probably crossed paths. I mean, I certainly was aware of you and My Intent, and I think we've maybe been in mutual circles with things like Abundance 360 or Summit Series, things like that. But we've never, I don't know if we've ever actually met and or spent time together. But when my wife told me that you were the commencement speaker at Ohio State this spring and my oldest son is graduating from Ohio State, I'm like, I'm going to reach out to Chris and see if he wants to come on the podcast because I think this is great.
Perfect. I love it.
Yeah. So I'm super excited that you're coming back to Columbus and that you will be the speaker. You're the kind of speaker that I think kids really should be hearing from. You know, I think your story is going to be super important to them, inspiring to them, relatable to them. And I'm psyched that my son gets to have you as his commencement speaker. And it's great to have a chance to just spend some time with you here on the podcast.
Thank you for having me.
Yeah. Yeah. And so let's just, you know, talk a bit about kind of, I want to contextually give people some sense as to who you are and how you have come to what you are doing today. Because I know you've gone through a journey and it's a pretty remarkable one. And, you know, it's in your past, but just, I think, so people can kind of see how you are able to take the steps that you've taken to get where you are today. Let's paint the picture a little bit. Son of immigrants, you know, talk to me just a little bit about that kind of earliest part of your childhood.
Well, I think I'm the grandson of refugees from mm-hmm. China to Taiwan. I'm the son of immigrants, and I myself am an immigrant. Mm-hmm. And there's a certain energy that comes with that. Mm-hmm. You have to fight for your life. You have to fight for everything. And I was super blessed to be able to then, my parents took care of getting me here to the US. I was born in Taiwan and I learned my first word of English on my flight over from Taiwan to Cincinnati at the age of 7. Hmm. I was thrown in an environment where I had to learn a whole new language and I looked so different from every other kid in the class. Mm-hmm. I was bullied a lot. I was alone a lot. I felt like I didn't fit in. And in hindsight, I look back and I was like, wow, I was put through like Navy SEALs training at a very young age. Mm-hmm. You know, in terms of resilience and problem solving, persistence, all those skills, I didn't have it easy, but I'm now glad I didn't have it easy. Although probably at the time, I wish I did have it easy. Mm-hmm. Right. And then I went to school in Cincinnati, Ohio. My parents moved me to Beijing for 2 years. I attended the International School of Beijing, kids there from 40 different countries. And that was a completely opposite experience where nobody fit in. So then everybody fit in. Mm-hmm. Mm. So I got to do anything I wanted to do. There was no preconceived conceptions of who I was supposed to be. I tried everything. And then I moved back to the US. I got actually in ninth grade, I wanted to be Jon Bon Jovi because I saw an MTV video of him doing You Give Love a Bad Name. I was running around my living room wanting to be that. And then in high school.
Weren't we all, by the way?
Right?
I mean, who didn't want to be Bon Jovi?
And then in high school, I got really involved with my church. It was a Chinese church, and it was the only place I felt truly accepted, you know, being Asian in Ohio. And I really loved the music there. I loved the idea of community. And so I considered being a youth pastor at one point during my high school years. My parents really wanted me to be a doctor. So I went to college. I went to Ohio State, was in the honors program. Most of my learning was actually out of the classroom. It was all around, you know, being a part of organizations, leading organizations, looking at where are the problems on campus and solving them and making things better.
Mm-hmm. Do you mind if I just hop in there for a second?
Yeah, of course.
Yeah. Just want to back up. I have a lot of questions. But, you know, you talk about this Navy SEAL, you know, kind of fire hose childhood experience where you were forced to build some resilience and bullying and, you know, being a kid that, you know, wasn't speaking the language or having to learn to speak the language. And just, yeah, you're in Cincinnati, Ohio, the Midwest or, you know, Ohio, certainly maybe at those times. And just being a kid, it can be really tough. I'm kind of curious, you know, especially, you know, as we start to talk about the work that you're doing today, you know, emotional wellness and the things that you're passionate about, you know, if you could just maybe speak to like how hard that was and how it did kind of land inside of you and affect you at that time.
Hmm. You know, the story of Batman?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's what it felt like.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, mm-hmm. My parents were murdered, but it might as well have been like, you know, as a child, like it felt like I was murdered mm-hmm. you know, as a human being. So I was able to turn that energy into something positive. Mm-hmm. That's what it felt like. I was mm-hmm. scrawny. I didn't speak the language. I didn't look like anybody else. Mm-hmm. I was the last kid picked for everything. Mm-hmm. And so that gave me all the fuel I needed for the rest of the journey. Mm-hmm.
And it's something just sort of innate in you or what do you attribute the kind of mindset shift to be able to say like, well, I'm just going to go out and be Batman, you know, where somebody else might have, I don't know, turned to, you know, acting out or drugs or, you know, depression or something else, you know, you used it as fuel is what it sounds like.
Yeah, it's probably my grandmother. She was deeply religious, would wake up and pray a couple hours every morning. And so I spent years 4 to 7 with her. Mm-hmm. My parents had already come to the US, but they couldn't afford to have me in the States. Mm-hmm. So I think her influence is very heavy in my life and having, you know, a lot of church in my life, I think kept me on the straight path for the mm-hmm. most part.
Yeah.
And also my parents. I mean, you know, my parents, I think my dad put the fear of God in me if I was ever going to do anything naughty.
Yeah.
So it was not an option if I wanted to stay alive to go sideways.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And talk a little bit more about either church and or, you know, what you started to talk about where, you know, you were encouraged to go to medical school or to be a doctor, but you were learning a lot outside of the classroom. It seems like that seems to be really impactful to you, whether it be the church or the leadership lessons. You seem to be getting a lot of information, experience, knowledge, you know, passion around what you were learning outside of the classroom.
I think school is just one place we can learn.
Yeah.
But in every interaction, in every situation, there's an opportunity to learn, because we're not on this planet just to learn math and chemistry.
Right.
We're here to learn compassion. We're here to learn empathy. We're here to learn forgiveness. We're here to learn how to be kind. And those lessons are found everywhere.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, in the church, we talked about that a lot, right? The fruits of the spirit, right? We talked about, you know, love is kind, love is patient, you know, so on and so forth. So I was really blessed to have that underpinning, even though I may not agree with everything that the church teaches. But, you know, I took a lot of beautiful lessons from my time there and my involvement there. Because I probably spent more time, you know, researching and preparing for my next, you know, I was talking in front of congregations as a high school kid. I was preparing the whole set list for worship. I was doing it all. And I probably had way more passion in that than I did in all my other stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So I was in it. And then, you know, in terms of the med school thing, that was mostly driven by my dad worked at General Electric under Jack Welch. And there was a constant threat of being laid off.
Mm-hmm.
And as an immigrant family, we didn't have a backup plan. You know, if he got laid off, like, who's going to pay the mortgage? And so that anxiety, that stress was persistent. And it turned into a lot of arguments between my parents, myself. And that's why they really pushed me to be a doctor, because they thought, well, at least if you're a doctor, you'll never have to worry about a recession. You know, people always get sick. That was a huge driver. And of course, it's very noble and it's a great, you know, profession. But that was a huge driver. And I love the idea of helping people. I actually went to med school for 3 weeks. And then I realized, like, that wasn't my path. There are many ways to help people.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm maybe jumping around a little bit, but I just am curious, you know, when you think about parents, and I think about this a lot, you know, having kids that are, you know, contemplating their careers, you know, your parents and hearing that experience, it sounds to me like the intentions are so good, right? They're like, I touched this hot stove, or I had this experience, and I want my kids to have something else better, right? And so we love our kids. We think that we're giving them what it is that they need, you know, based on our own lives. But in fact, you know, it's different for each kid, right? And it's not a straight line. And just because something happened in the past doesn't mean it's going to happen in the future. I'm wondering what you're going to tell these kids, you know, if you know, there's...
Everybody has their own journey, right? One of my favorite quotes is Tony Robbins. You know, he has a son who's very chill and laid back. And he said, you know, and he tried for his whole life to get his son to be like him, right? Fired up, like, you know, motivated, like, you know, and one day finally he had a light bulb going. He's like, and then I think it's Jake. And he's like, I think Jake is in my life to teach me how to chill.
That's great.
And kick back and enjoy life, you know? And
yeah.
So I think if you ever watch the movie Soul, you know that movie?
Yeah.
You know, and you know, it's such a powerful, profound movie. That's a cartoon, right?
Mm-hmm.
But it talks about how different souls have different journeys.
Yeah.
And so, you know, we have to recognize that just because it's my journey to be this crazy, you know, whatever, it doesn't mean it's the right fit for every other person that's going to be in that stadium.
Yeah. That was a pretty good...
But that's why, like, the My Intent Project, it's all about what's your word,
mm-hmm.
right? People always ask me, what should my word be? I'm like, well, let me ask you some questions. I'll help you figure it out, but mm-hmm. I'm not you. And I don't know which lesson you're on. Only you know that.
Yeah. Yeah. That was a pretty good Tony Robbins impression, by the way.
I love that guy. He's awesome.
Yeah, I did too. Yeah, that's a great story. So tell me then, you know, I mean, obviously you've got some pretty impressive credentials on your resume, and I know that it's not your focus. You know, you're focused on what you're doing today, and you know, give us a little bit of color on Harvard Business School and Pepsi and Facebook. I mean, you do kind of go down this path of, you know, sort of high accolade, high credential, you know, high performing, pretty rocket ship environments. Maybe, you know, say what you want about that.
So I think there are two themes that run throughout that kind of the first half of my career. I think there's going to be like three chapters. The first chapter was all about financial freedom and accumulating skills. And my ex-girlfriend, who I'm still dear friends with, she always said, you know, life is like Zelda. And I've never actually even played Zelda, but she was like, no, you just go through different parts and you just pick up keys and skills that you need later to unlock things and do things, right? And I think Steve Jobs mentions that too. Like, you pick up things along the way that you don't realize is going to help you down the road, right? So, you know, McKinsey was great because I wanted to get more Navy SEALs training, right? They say it's the Navy SEALs of business. And I had to drop into a new situation that I knew nothing about. And within 1 or 2 weeks, become an expert. Within 4 weeks, make a presentation to the CEO about what's wrong with this company or her company, right? That skill set is so powerful to be able to quickly go in, have the confidence to just learn and be able to have an impact very quickly. Then Harvard Business School was because I had read The 7 Habits of Highly Effective People when I was in high school. And I actually ended up teaching that at Ohio State. When I was a senior, I presented that to 500 juniors. You know, I just love that book. And Stephen Covey had gone to Harvard Business School. Mm-hmm. So that planted a seed that I also wanted to go to Harvard Business School. So there, it was an incredible experience. I was a co-president of the marketing club, you know, just networked with amazing CEOs. You know, we had the who's who coming through, traveled around the world with my classmates. Then I got recruited to PepsiCo. They needed someone who understood digital because the world was shifting from TV advertising to digital. And my then boss was also an HBS grad, 12 years ahead of me. And I went there. You know, China was the second largest market for PepsiCo after the United States, right? 1.5 billion people. So I went and I was in the room with mostly people 10 plus years older than me, you know, as my peers. And I learned a ton. And part of my calculation there was I wanted to learn entertainment marketing. You know, if I can learn how to make a soda water that's dark and bubbly cool, then I can make anything cool, right? Look at these bracelets. They're just bracelets, but I've built a brand around it. So I wanted to learn brand building, and I consider Richard Lee, which is my boss there, one of the best brand builders ever. Mm. And so I went there for 1.5 years, learned that skill set. He had a retreat December of 2007, where he was in 2006. He was inspiring all of us to dare for more, be our best, et cetera. You know, lots of Steve Jobs quotes, et cetera. And that December and January, I just sat back and I was like, well, I'm 29. And actually at 22, I had set a goal to be financially independent by 30. So I'm on the cusp of 30, making 200K a year, which back then was like making 500,000, 700K a year. It's a lot of money, but I was nowhere near going to be retired, like financially free. So I just pulled the ripcord and I resigned and I decided I want to go start a company that would impact people. And I also felt a little guilty about selling sugar water. I didn't think that was necessarily the best thing, that, you know, to get kids to drink more sugar water. So I tried to do a few different startups in China, but I'm not local, not native. And I thought it was going to be really, really difficult for me to be an expat and build a startup in China. So then I started thinking about what other companies I can go to. And I was going through a really hard kind of a depression because I was like, wow, like this is now all of a sudden really hard. But I had this intuition that Facebook was going to be massive. And I knew there's only two ways to get financial independence in a short amount of time. One was tech and one was finance, right? Run a hedge fund, private equity. And I was way more passionate about tech. And I loved Facebook. And I had actually met Mark Zuckerberg in 2004 when he was just starting Facebook, right? So then I reached out to Zuck. I reached out to a few other people I knew that were working there. And they didn't have an opportunity for me. But I kept, literally every day, I'd wake up and I would look at the news for Facebook. And I saw that this guy named Chamath Palihapitiya had been hired as the VP of product marketing. And that day I found his email from his VC firm, chamath@mayfield.com. And I emailed him that day, a quick 2-paragraph blurb of, here's who I am, here's how I can help you. Next morning, I get up and there's an email back from him saying, hey, send me your thoughts in a PowerPoint and let's talk. So for the next 2 weeks, I spent every waking moment racking my brain, trying to figure out how I'm going to impress this guy to get my shot at my dream. And so I did the presentation, he loved it, flew me out, and I joined Facebook. And that was 4 years on a rocket ship. You know, I would join when there was 50 million users. I left, there was 500 million. I think of it as my time with the Chicago Bulls when Jordan was there. Mm-hmm. You know, yeah. Like I got to be a water boy, you know, watching that dynasty get built. And it was life-changing because by the time I was 35, the equity I was given had 100x. And I was finally financially free. Yeah. I no longer had to worry about a paycheck.
Amazing. Yeah. I'm struck by the... I'm just remembering the Steve Jobs quote where I can't remember the CEO of Pepsi's name, John. He says, you want to sell sugar water the rest of your life? You want to come with me and change the world?
Yeah. Wow. there you go.
So there you go. So Awesome.
You said it, not me. I still have friends over at PepsiCo. I love them dearly.
No disrespect. I'm actually more of a Diet Coke guy, but yeah. In any event. Yeah. So amazing, you know, and I'm kind of curious, you know, these things that you have in your mind about wanting to go to learn brand, you know, I think that's sort of a mature thought to be having when you're kind of making strategic decisions with your career, that you really were thinking about brand and you were thinking about it from the standpoint of learning, because you really knew that there was something else out there for you eventually, but you wanted to get the expertise that you needed to be able to do that. And then this financial independence piece, I think, is also a really like a wonderful way to be thinking about it, not from the standpoint of like, I want to get rich so I can buy a car and do all these fancy things, right? Which people today, maybe especially more than ever.
Actually, they end up being enslaved to those things.
Correct, right?
Because they have such debt because they need to then stick to their 9-to-5. And I live pretty comfortably, but not extravagantly.
Yeah. And you were thinking about it though, from with financial freedom right? Yeah. The freedom piece of that.
People miss that part.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah.
The goal isn't to accumulate more wealth. The goal is to be free.
Yeah. And so when you achieve the freedom and you have the experience that you have, is that what leads you on to my intent? Was that the next step for you?
Yeah. So I was dating someone for 5 years. We broke up. I was in a deep heartbreak. And this guy was like, hey, you might want to try the Hoffman. And I certainly didn't want to do it, but I had no choice. I was in so much emotional pain that, hey, a week of therapy in a year, or a year of therapy in a week, game on.
Yeah. So. Yeah, and I've done Landmark and many other sort of, you know, intense therapeutic modalities. I've not done Hoffman, but I probably should, because I just keep hearing so many people speak so favorably of it. But talk a little bit about the emotional pain, because on the surface, it's like, well, you have the freedom, you've had the...
We have financial freedom, but that's different than emotional freedom, than spiritual freedom, right? Those are different things. So that I had to learn that the hard way. I mean, not the hard way, but it was just part of my curriculum, right?
Yeah.
Financial freedom. You know, there's plenty of people who are billionaires that are miserable. Mm-hmm. There's plenty of people who have hundreds of millions of dollars who are absolutely miserable, right? You go through the medicine closet of Beverly Hills and you will be blown away by what's inside there, mm-hmm. right? And emotional pain doesn't go away just because you have more zeros in your bank account.
Yeah.
And that at the Hoffman, I was finally given a container. You know, it was no phones, no laptops, no books, no exercise, no masturbation, no nothing. You had to sit with your feelings. Mm-hmm. And we were in these processes, right? We were in these groups and also individual, where you were invited to really like start to connect to the heart. Because most of us, as you know, we live from the head up. We're just in our heads. We're completely disconnected from our heart. And especially in a macro environment where church attendance and religious participation is an all-time low, and we have phones that are like crack for our attention. When does any of us have the discipline to meditate, to have a moment to ourselves, to connect with our heart, right? And so this week-long experience was all about just clearing the air, just to be able to like receive and to then talk about gratitude, talk about forgiveness, forgiving people that you've held grudges against for years, and all that deep work. And it was held by the most loving teachers. It was in this, in nature. It was just like, wow.
Amazing. And so you come out of that, with this new sense of what matters, with this new, clarity or freedom, emotional freedom. I mean, at least, you've kind of gained a tremendous sense of awareness about things.
I'm all about big opportunities. There's a book that you probably heard of called Blue Ocean.
Yeah.
Right. And so like Facebook to me was a massive opportunity, right? Google's a massive opportunity. Yellow Pages, Google, right? Like network TV, Facebook. I was like, emotional and spiritual freedom? Mm-hmm. No one's touching that.
Yeah.
Nobody.
Yeah.
But the closest thing is yoga studios and SoulCycle. Mm. That's the closest thing we got in terms of innovation, right? I've got a church down the street from me that can fit 300 people. You know how many people are there every Sunday? Like 30, and they're on their 70s. Wonderful people. But the younger folks, like, we're on our phones, we're at, football games, and we're completely neglecting our emotional and spiritual needs. I always say, we are emotionally constipated, spiritually disconnected, and look at the depression, look at the anxiety, look at the divisiveness. Mm-hmm. We have never been in worse shape as a culture.
Yeah. And so you see the blue ocean there, and it is. I mean, boy.
The last day I was there, I set an intention to dedicate the rest of my life to emotional and spiritual freedom.
Yeah.
That was my intention. That was my commitment on the last day of that process. And I didn't know 8 months later, I would be given my first intention bracelet, right? But I knew that directionally, I needed to go to emotional and spiritual freedom. That was the direction. Mm-hmm. And all the other pieces started falling in place along the way for the last 10 years.
Yeah. Okay. So let's talk about how the pieces are falling into place, because this is the thing that I'm super excited about. I've been working on a book and a platform that I'm kind of breaking it down into sections: awaken, align, and expand. And when you kind of go through
that.
Yeah, thank you. When you go through that like awakening and you start to then like integrate it, the expansion is that like the blue ocean just gets bigger and bigger, right? Yeah. Especially sadly in the world that we're in, where people need that support spiritually,
people
emotionally
so
more than ever.
Beat down, right?
They're
beat down right now because inflation.
Yeah. So tell me, talk about what you do with that clarity, that this is how you want to spend the rest of your life. Tell me what you're doing.
I had the first vision was my birthday on August 21st, 2013, right? Mm. I had a birthday party where I didn't have any alcohol. I rented an art gallery that was very classy, filled with art. You know, it looked like a like just a rectangular room, but with really high ceilings. And people came, and we had people who could do art if they wanted to. They could write on the wall one thing that they hope to do someday. I called it a dream board, right? There were people from the Hoffman there if they wanted to talk to people from the Hoffman. Then for the programming part, we started off with some breathing and some just body scans, kind of like a meditation. And then we had people singing. Then we had singing plus dancing. Then we had a little improv comedy where we laughed together. And then afterwards, we had people just mingling and making smoothies. And it was the most beautiful night of my life. And then I invited friends to come and share their gifts. And one of them came and brought a little set of tools that can make intention bracelets. And I was gifted she made me one. And the first word I chose was impact, because I'm obsessed about impact. And I nicknamed the whole concept Spirit Lab, because to me, that's like adult summer camp meets church, right? Nothing religious, like in terms of any dogma that you have to believe in, but it was all about uplifting the human spirit. And it was very hands-on and a little bit experimental, getting to do things like making a bracelet. Maybe people hadn't tried that before. And some of it was, you know, painting, right? Things that we would do as kids, but we forget to do as adults. Because when you create, because part of the problem, the illness that we're all in is consumerism. We built this capitalist society that, you know, has its beautiful parts too, but the idea of turning everyone to consumerism, that equals depression, right? The human spirit needs to create. It's the opposite of consumerism. And so it doesn't matter if you're creating a poem, you're creating a piece of art, you're creating a song, you're singing. You have to create to be alive. Mm-hmm. You know that movie WALL-E? You know, that future where everyone's just on these like little pods and they just watch screens and they just drink, you know, out of a big soda cup. Like, that's half of America right now. Mm-hmm. And that's why we're so in a bad shape.
Yeah.
We got to get people to create.
Yes.
That's the human spirit coming alive.
Couldn't agree more. It's just another, you're speaking my language, because I really just believe that's why we're here. Mm-hmm. You know, that we come from creation and we are born creators. Mm-hmm. And I think people, and maybe you could speak to this, they get lost on what that means, mm-hmm. right? They think they have to paint, right?
They have to paint good enough to sell it, which is not true.
That's true too.
That's the thing with singing is people think, oh, I have to be a good singer. I have to be a good whatever to be able to do it. And we don't give ourselves permission to just be a beginner and just have fun with it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And to create another. Yes, right? We are. Yes,
we might not all be Picasso and make a living from it, but we all can do it.
Yeah. And do you also think that we can create in other ways too, right? Like, it doesn't even have to be art and music.
No, it can be businesses.
Right.
Right. It can be nonprofits. It can be organizations. It can be
relationships.
Yeah. Relationships. We can create an experience for people on a Sunday.
Right.
Have to go to the park.
Right.
That experience will uplift you and your friends.
Right. It's why I like the intention piece too. It's like, you could just create a lovely conversation with someone, you know, you could create just a brief interaction with somebody that feels good in the moment. Yeah. You know, you're constantly in creation.
Creating a bracelet for someone is life-changing for that person. And I get to hear the wisdom that person has to share.
Yeah. Yeah. Awesome. Tell me more about, you know, then what else, you know, where else this commitment?
So then
commitment.
I did that for 7 years. Mm-hmm. And during the, okay. So in 2013, as I was going through this healing process, every morning I would wake up and I would sing for a half hour. And it was my lifesaver. Otherwise I'd be on antidepressants. Mm-hmm. Right. It helped me get all the emotions out of my body. You know, all that sadness, all that pain I was able to express. And, you know, they say feel to heal it, right? And during the pandemic, I was also lonely and kind of sad. And I bumped into this group of people who were starting to get together every other Monday to just like jam. It was called Unjam, right? It was just like come together, jam. It was very casual. You know, no, like there was like a facilitator, but everyone took turns leading. And it was really interesting because I, you know, as a musician, it looks like you are as well. I enjoyed it, but it was kind of suboptimal for me because nobody knew the same songs. So we'd pull out our phones and, you know, nobody really prepared anything. People would just be like, oh, like, let's just do this. But, you know, half the group knew it. You know, there was a lot of lyrics and I didn't want to like have to look at a phone. And, you know, I'm like, I want to get off my phone. So then I started thinking, wow, you know, I put on my problem solver hat, my, you know, Facebook growth hacker hat and my McKinsey hat. And I said, hey, what are the barriers to like a group sing along? Right. And it turns out there's three. One is a mindset. People think you have to sing because, you know, only sing if you're Adele. But that's, you know, part of singing to perform for other people. But there's also singing to feel good, singing for wellness. So, okay, let's change the mindset. So it's not American Idol focus, but it's just to feel good. Two is there's too many lyrics, right? Because nobody can remember that many lyrics for that many songs. Not even the professionals can. They all have little teleprompters on stage to, you know, cheat when they forget. So then I started taking songs and I would just deconstruct them to just pull one line out of it. And it's already happening. I mean, David Guetta did that with Your Love Tonight. You know, like it's already been done in EDM, but I'm just doing it more. Mm-hmm. And then we could take melodies and simplify the melodies. Instead of having crazy, you know, Mariah Carey, Whitney Houston-like melodies, I can make that much more like bunny slopes. You know, you think about skiing, mm-hmm. there's bunny slopes, greens, blues, blacks, and double blacks, right? A lot of the stuff you hear on the radio is blacks and double blacks. But I'm literally writing and creating music that's greens and maybe blues. Mm-hmm. Much more approachable for the beginner. Mm-hmm.
Interesting. So, and I actually love the fact that you put on those hats because I do think those are really important, you know, pieces of that puzzle that you're putting in place that people do need to hear, which is like sometimes it really, really helps to have these skills that you develop along the way, even if they're not going to be the things that you're going to do forever. Right. So, as you start to move forward into this new thing, you're bringing all of these pieces along the way, problem solving, branding, your love of music, right? Your healing, your passion for spiritual and emotional, and your passion for creation. Now it's all getting put together in a puzzle that, you know, you can stand on and use go forward.
Yeah. You know, my grandma always said they can take away everything because they're refugees, right? She always said to me, they can take away everything, but what's in your head. Mm-hmm. And so that always stuck with me.
Yeah. And I would add, you know, what's in your heart.
Absolutely.
You know,
what's inside you, right? Literally, right. They left China. They were wealthy. They had a, you know, business, like a newspaper business. And when they got to Taiwan, they had clothes and they had a little bit of gold on them, like a tiny amount. And that was it. Mm-hmm. And they had to rebuild.
Yeah. So tell me more about it's Vomo.me, right?
Yeah. So that's Vomo.
Yeah.
So that's the last 3 years. We've been recording music. I've been testing it. I've been doing it with CEOs to, you know, my friends. I've been doing it with kids. I've been doing it at homeless shelters. I've been, you know, with doctors. I was just at the Stanford Mental Health Care Summit, you know, and then I saw Bitcoin ETFs come out earlier this year. And I had another mind-blowing, jaw-dropping moment, just said, wow, okay, this is like going to change the world.
Yeah.
And so I started diving into that. As I was diving more into that, I started just thinking about, wow, like investing just got really simple. I mean, before it was like, okay, you buy half index funds, half bonds, and you know, half fixed income, you rebalance, it's whatever, right? With Bitcoin, you just dollar cost average in, you take 5-10% of your paycheck every month, put it in, in 5 years, you're going to have down payment for a house, you know? So then I started thinking about, wow, there's so many people out there that, as I was having these Bitcoin conversations, I started realizing a lot of my friends don't have an investing mindset. They're just afraid of it. They don't understand it. They're afraid of it. They don't take the time to learn it. And I was like, wow, this is a problem, because a lot of people are going to retire with no savings. Because right now, most people don't work at GE or P&G or some big company that has a pension, right? Most people work for themselves now in this gig economy. And all of a sudden, then I see Larry Fink, you know, write a letter to all of BlackRock saying our biggest pandemic ahead of us is retirement for most people. And I was already thinking the same thing. And I was like, yep, that just validated that, you know, intuition I had. And so I started talking to some of my friends and said, hey, let's build a platform to help gig economy workers and college students learn to save and invest. And I also know that a lot of spending is emotional and spiritual related. It's people feeling not enough. So they have to buy a handbag to impress other people. They have to buy a car they don't really need to just have status, right? And then they're in debt and then they never get ahead. They're always enslaved. So I want people to feel enough. One of our most popular words is I am enough, that people choose for their bracelet.
Yeah.
As I can, because I've been doing this for 10 years, helping people feel enough, then they don't need to buy half the things they buy. You know, one of the guys that works for me, I know what he makes. And every morning he used to come in with a Starbucks. And I was like, what are you doing? Mm-hmm. You know, that $5 is $2,000 in a year. You put that into Bitcoin, that's 10K in like, you know, no time, 20K, right? And, you know, like you got to think about the future. All those little decisions that you make, you know, it's a part of the Atomic Habits book, right? Mm-hmm. Little micro decisions add up to be destiny deciding for us. So, you know, I'm going to talk about Bitcoin at graduation.
Good.
Something I'm not going to tell them what to do, but I'm going to tell them where the answer is. Yeah. They need to figure out for themselves.
Sure.
Right. But that you have to invest, you know, an investment, you know, that's how rich people get richer, but everybody has to learn how to invest.
Yeah.
And it's actually really easy right now. There's one asset class that's going to just take us to the moon and just got to like have discipline and not try to, you know, poop. I call it poop coins because I can't use the word shit coins on stage probably, but you know, don't go like, you know, Dogecoin all the way, but like, you know, that's different than Bitcoin, right? It's like buying gold. It's like being at the roulette table.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's good. I'm glad that you're talking about it. It's, you know, I have two, soon to be three kids. Well, actually, I guess I'll still have two because one's graduating, but they're all in that age, right? College age. And I listen to their friends and we talk about it. And I, you know, through like communities like Abundance 360, by the way, my word when I first got my intent bracelet was enough. And I learned about cryptocurrencies in those communities many years ago. And thank God, you know, it's been awesome, but there's still a lot of skepticism in the
miseducation.
Right.
Massive misunderstanding. And people are lazy. They don't dig into the facts. And they just, like, one of my dearest friends is like, it's bad for the environment. I'm like, yeah, it was bad for the environment. But now, did you know 40% of mining is done fully with renewable energy, 70% partial renewable, and it's shifting rapidly?
Yeah.
You know, just because something was broken, just like, you know, a kid poops in his pants, right? Or her pants. That doesn't mean the kid is bad. It's, you know, it's just early, right?
Right.
You just teach the kid how to not do certain things and you train. Yeah. Bitcoin is, you know, it was in its infancy a little bit messy, but as it's now maturing, it's now an ETF that you can buy in Fidelity and Schwab, right? It's a whole different stage of its maturity.
Yeah. And when you start to actually learn, this was kind of a big aha for me, because I think it took me years to really, and I'm still learning, to really understand it. But when you start to really get into the intention of it, the thought process of it, you know, I took a 3-month sabbatical back in 2019, I think. And I had no plans to do anything. There was no projects, there was no books, nothing. I just wanted to take 3 months off. And the big aha I got at the very end was I really started to believe, as I was looking at Web3 and VR and crypto, that these technologies were actually coming in as a gift from God to solve problems that human beings were having a hard time solving on their own. And when you start to look at the intention of something and the potential of something like a new currency, you know, it's pretty phenomenal.
Yeah. There's a very spiritual aspect to Bitcoin and Bitcoiners, 100%.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, I'm sure you saw, like, a lot of people are like, wow, here's a guy or people, whoever the creator, whoever Satoshi is, right? You know, can you imagine creating a $1 trillion asset class and not wanting credit for it?
Right.
Right?
Yeah.
I mean, like, if that's not, you know, being kind of unselfish and being like generous with your energy, I don't know what is.
Right. Yeah. And just the ability to shift power, to shift, you know, just change systems that are unfair.
Yeah. I mean, you know, it's a hidden tax that we're all subjected to, right? You know, we've been taxed 25% the last 4 years and we didn't even know it. A dollar from 2020 is only worth 75 cents right now in terms of purchasing power, right? That's a tax you and I did not sign up for. Yeah. We did not approve that bill, but it happened because some people in power decided that they had another agenda that we didn't approve.
And what I think is great about guys like you is, you know, that system I've benefited from. I'm okay, you know, but I know that not everybody is, and most people aren't. And that's not okay with me, and it's not okay with you. And I love that
if you're a retiree, right? All of a sudden, like, you can't afford even your property tax at the rate we're going.
Yeah.
Right. It's creating massive issues for people who don't know how to invest. Because a lot of people still have that mindset to keep their wealth in cash, right? Mm-hmm. Or they're getting 5%, you know, they're buying like a CD or money market at 5%. But at 5%, when inflation is going 8 to 10, you know, every year you're literally losing 3 to 5% purchasing power, guaranteed. Oh, and by the way, that 5% that you're getting is getting taxed. So really, you're getting like 3% after tax.
Right.
Right? You're watching your purchasing power literally just melt away.
Yeah. So tell me where you are with this. It's a whole new platform.
It's a platform we're building. And I bumped into a friend who has a project called moneyanimals.com, which I think is so fascinating. We're still figuring out how we're going to partner. I would highly recommend you and all the listeners to go to moneyanimals.com. And it's like a Myers-Briggs, but for your investment style and your relationship with money. So highly recommend that. I've never felt so seen because basically I did that test, right? And I'm a money phoenix. And I was like, wow. And then I talked to the founder, Andrea, and she's like, yeah, no wonder you couldn't find, because for the last 10 plus years, I've tried so many different financial advisors and I couldn't get along with any of them. And half of them don't understand Bitcoin, for example. You know, like, and to be totally honest, there's two industries that I'm just like, you know, to your kids and all the other graduates, be wary of financial advisors and be wary of realtors.
Yeah.
Financial advisors, they're great relationship people, a lot of them. I'm not saying all of them, right? There's a few smart ones, but a lot of them are just good at relationships. But how much they really know about investing, you know, you could do the same thing yourself. If all they're going to do is put you into an index fund and a little bit of fixed income, you could do that yourself. You don't need to pay 1% for that, right? Mm-hmm. And if you go to them and say, hey, I want to put a little bit in Bitcoin, they're going to be like, well, are you sure about that? They're literally doing you a disservice.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
So like, just be careful, because I've had many smart financial advisors that I'm just like, wait, you think what about Bitcoin? Wow. Mm-hmm. Right.
Yeah. And talk a little bit about the real estate side of things.
So I have a new company that March 15th, I saw the news, NBC, you know, news about the NAR settlement, and my jaw dropped. And I literally spent the rest of the evening researching every article, just being like, wait a second. Wake up the next morning, call up my hedge fund friend. I'm like, what stocks do we short? Compass, Zillow, Redfin, like, do we short these all? What do we do? Mm-hmm. He's like, no, you go build a company. Mm-hmm. Like, shorting bad solutions is not going to provide a good solution. So from that moment, I started calling the smartest guys I knew in real estate and in tech. I have a network of ex-Facebook guys, you know, some ex-Google. And for the last month, we've been working on a business plan to completely reinvent the real estate transaction experience. Mm-hmm. You look at what happened to Blockbuster and, you know, Netflix. You look at what happened to stockbrokers and E-Trade. You look at what happened to, let's take, you know, Yellow Pages and Google, right? All these antiquated processes, inefficiencies. I've been retired for 10 years. I've just been doing fun side projects. I'm like getting back on the horse. This is the biggest opportunity I have seen in my lifetime. And many of my other friends who are also, you know, retired, right? They've already had a massive exit. They're all getting back in the game.
Yeah.
Hey, VCs calling me based on memes I'm posting on my Instagram. Like, top tier VCs are like, wait, you're doing AI plus real estate? Talk to me.
Yeah, fascinating. We probably have a lot to talk about there. I think there's a much bigger play I shouldn't say bigger in the terms of market size, because that brokerage, you know, is pretty massive.
5%, $100 billion.
Yeah.
We're going to return $80 billion back to American homeowners. I already know it.
Yeah.
That number from 5% is going down to 1%. In 5 years, we'll have it down to 1%. We'll be the Airbnb of that industry.
Yeah.
It will return, like, American homeowners right now, if you're a $1 million home and you're going to have to pay $50,000 in the future, that's going to be a $10,000 split between two sides, $5,000 each. Mm-hmm. So the American homeowner is going to take back a lot. And that's going to actually provide a lot of liquidity for the home, the house market.
Yeah.
Because right now, if you buy a house and you have to move because your job changed or your family's growing, right? And you sell your house in 3 years, you're going to be massively underwater because of the transaction fee.
Yeah.
Right. So, well, instead of being 5%, if it's only 1%, if you sell your home in 3 years, you might be okay.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, there's also a major problem just with real estate in general, especially on the commercial side. I started a company that was a blockchain-based startup that got backed by a VC that really screwed it up. that's a long story, but you know, I'm in the rental business. We develop real estate projects.
I love your community, by the way. I absolutely love it. I'd love to tour it when I'm in town.
Oh yeah, absolutely. I'd love to show you around. You know, one of the reasons we started this kind of side, you know, tech startup is because I'm personally not comfortable with the fact that what it costs for us to, what we have to charge in rent to be able to make our deals work is too much for people. And those that can't afford it leave with nothing. And that's not right. And so there's a massive ability to create disruption there too. And it's all driven by banks. It's driven by, you know, the capital markets. It's driven by monetary policy. It's driven by all these things that things like crypto and blockchain, you know, there's massive disruption there.
I'm so bullish on Bitcoin and on Web3.
Yeah.
Right. Not the meme coins. Like, that's a casino. I mean, that's going to wreak havoc on a lot of people. But but the fundamental technology and the thesis of decentralization, efficiency.
Yeah.
It's going to, you know, it's literally Web1, Web2, Web3. That's why it's called Web3. Yeah. It's the future.
Yeah. Awesome. Well, I love what you're doing and I love your path to it. And it's great to be connected with you. And if there's anything I can do to be supportive of these efforts, I mean, the fact that you're committing yourself to, you know, spiritual, emotional wellness, to financial freedom, to disruption in ways that are beneficial for everybody, using all of that experience that you have to do really well and to do good. You know, I love it. I think it's great. I love that you're a Buckeye. I mean, come on. It's awesome. You know,
the other thing I'm figuring out how to weave into my speech, give me some feedback.
Sure.
I know my life has been impacted massively by working intentional work with psychedelics.
Oh, okay. Cool. Yeah. Good.
So I'm wondering how to weave that in. You know, it's a, you know, Ohio Midwest crowd.
Yeah. You know, well, okay. Yeah. Well, I didn't know you wanted to go there, but me too. Okay. and so, yeah, you know, big part of my life too, has been since I was, you know, just screwing around in high school recreationally, but then, you know, as an adult doing things in a facilitated way, which I have a tremendous amount of reverence for, and I have a lot of concern about it. And actually, I think, you know, to answer your question, and by the way, while you're here, there's some people that I could connect you with. There's a gentleman at Ohio State who's doing psychedelic research. I'd love for you to meet.
I invest in that field and I would absolutely love to connect.
Okay, this is perfect. We're definitely going to get you together. Alan Davis, he's a beautiful human being and he's doing great work at Ohio State.
Let's do it. Yeah.
Yeah, cool. So we'll make that happen. But look, I think the thing is that, you know, what I'm concerned about with psychedelic work, especially with kids, is that they are just going and taking mushrooms with their friends and, you know, or like, you know, doing ayahuasca in Costa Rica with somebody who calls themselves a shaman.
Right.
It's, you know, you got to have the tools, right? So you got to have the integration or the alignment, right? Yeah. You got to have the before and the after, right? You got to be careful about what medicines you're taking and who you are and what you're bringing to it. So I think, you know, I don't know if I'm answering your question, but from my standpoint, I think it's wonderful to bring that into the light.
Yeah.
I think these kids know about it. They need to talk about it. It would be wonderful to hear from somebody like you about it. Yeah. And, you know, to talk about the importance of, you know, healing In a container, in a safe container.
I always think of it as it's like surgery, right? Spiritual surgery. Okay. You wouldn't do it in a back alley, right? You would do it in a hospital, in a place with someone that's vetted, with a team, in a proper setting. Like, you wouldn't just go in the woods and just cut yourself up and just be like, let me just, you know, I mean, people do that too, but I'm saying like 100% agreement. And there's some startups that I'm advising that are hoping to essentially create like a Yelp, but for these type of experiences, so that there's a legitimate review system. Mm-hmm. And, you know, you can find, you know, because I work with people who, I've been very lucky to work with folks that are, this one shaman, he started drinking ayahuasca himself. He's from the jungle of Colombia when he was six. And at the age of 15, he started serving. So he's been serving for 20 years, mm-hmm. you know, and he's of the medicine. Like, you know, someone like that, like I absolutely would have no issues with recommending that, you know, when a person's ready, right? Yeah. Like, that person is legitimate. You know, it's like a surgeon that's done a lot of surgeries.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
But yeah, someone who just proclaimed they did two ceremonies and they're like, oh, I'm a shaman. I mean, you know,
yeah.
somebody that like did two like little, you know, yeah.
Yeah. And also I think that Yelp thing is interesting. You know, I think you kind of have to, I don't know. I actually was just talking about this with another friend of mine on a podcast. You know, I kind of am a little conflicted because sometimes I think like holding it in the bigger, you know, more meta frame of God and that there are no accidents and everything's happening in divine perfection. On the other hand, I think my experience has been, it's good to kind of meet people where they are and tiptoe through the water. You don't have to jump right in. You don't have to rip the Band-Aid. You don't have to go to the jungle, do ayahuasca. You might start with, you know, EMDR. You might start with, absolutely. You know, ketamine or something.
Breathwork, meditation. Breath work.
Right.
Yeah. 100%. I didn't, you know, my journey started in 2013 with Hoffman, you know, and I had a tiny psychedelic experience in 17. It wasn't until end of 19. So 7 years later that I really was fully ready for ayahuasca.
Right. Yeah. Well, if I could be helpful to how you weave that in, if you want to, you know, kick around, you know, anything you're thinking about.
I'd love to send you my speech and
please
get your kids to review it and
okay.
feedback. I would love it.
Awesome. I love it, Chris. I think it's really, you know, when you break it down spiritually and you really talk about, you know, the compassion and the importance of people coming together. I do think that's why we're here and it's what people need now more than ever. And I think it's a really wonderful and important message that no matter how many people hear it and respond to it, it'll be really worth it. I think, you know, you got to start, you know, somewhere and standing and being courageous and being brave and really talking about
impact. Thing. You know, like if I'm not here to give a speech.
Yeah.
I'm here to change the world.
Yeah.
Starting with bucket.
I love it. I was wondering when you mentioned, you know, you learned your first word of English on the airplane over, I could imagine this little baby Chris saying impact.
Thank you. I hadn't thought of that, but you know, it was in my, you know, I must have chosen that, you know, before I came into this journey.
Yeah. Cool. Yeah. Well, thank you, Chris. Thanks again. To be continued. Lots more to talk about. It'll be great to be together here in a few weeks.
Thank you for listening to the Gravity Podcast. Please subscribe to the show at Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you listen to podcasts. To learn more about the entire Gravity Project, please go to gravityproject.com. Please check out the podcast on Instagram at the Gravity Podcast. Music heard of the show is provided courtesy of Kyle Lamoro and Oliver Oak.